Good afternoon, everyone. Hope they're all well. Looks like it's in between rain right now, so by the time the church service is over, it's probably going to start raining again. So at least hopefully the puddles won't be too bad by the time church is over. Thank Mr. Jacobs for that Bible study. It's a very good one. Some of the things we always take for granted. You know, we always ask a blessing over the meal. Why? And so that's something that is very helpful for our Christian walk, to know why we do what we do. There's traditions that are non-biblical, but are biblical premised, and that's definitely one of them. So thanks again. Well, I'd like to start today. I have a very bland title page for my PowerPoint here. But I'd like to start by talking about the Mount of Olives. I had a whole slideshow full of many, many slides about when I went to Israel in 2019. But I had so many of them that my introduction would have been about 90% of my message. So I had to cut it down to just this one slide. This is a picture from the basically the southern steps of the Temple Mount. On the left, that wall right there is part of the Temple Mount, and then behind it is the Mount of Olives over there. And it's kind of interesting. My dad went on what's called the dig when he was in Ambassador College, and he basically dug pretty much close to where this picture was taken, maybe a little bit further back. But there's a very important place in biblical times, both in the past and in the future. So hopefully I can get to maybe a fall time message with the other pictures. It's much more lent towards that one. But for now, this picture kind of sets it up pretty good. So what I'd like to do now, since Mr. Jacobs was talking about trivia, I'll have a trivia question for you guys, see if you can figure out who I'm talking about. The Mount of Olives was very critical to a scene in the Bible, so let's see if you can figure out what I'm talking about. We have a kingly figure. Apologize if the font's a little small. Very stressful time in his life. Anybody starting to formulate in their mind, you know, general who's being talked about here? Life was in peril. His close friends and confidants were bailing out on him right and left. Betrayal was around every corner. He goes to the Mount of Olives to pray for his future. Anybody think they know kind of who I'm talking about? Well, he leaves and goes east to evade his son. Okay, so those who were thinking that I was talking about Jesus might say he didn't have a son, and you'd be right. There's some crazy theories out there that Jesus had a family. Well, no, that's not correct. Jesus never had a family. He will have a lot of brothers and sisters, but that's in a future time. What I'm talking about is King David. This is during the time of his son Absalom's insurrection, a word that's been in the news for the last few years. Absalom created and carried through with an insurrection against his father. And it's something that is recorded in the passage starting around 2 Samuel 15, so if everyone would start meandering that way, we're going to take a look at some parts starting in 2 Samuel 15. Now, in the early parts of this chapter, while you guys are going there, you'll see Absalom's rise in, let's call it, personal politics. He sets himself as a judge at the gate of Jerusalem, the gates being a place of very high influence in the ancient world. Mr. Besray last week referenced Psalm 127, I believe. And it's written there that because of the strength of one's God-given and God-centered family, that a person can speak boldly at the gates with their enemies. A prominent place, again, a significant part of the city, especially in the capital city of Jerusalem for Absalom. So as mentioned, Absalom gains personal notoriety in the eyes of the people. He was out there doing the favorable things for the people, such that the people said, hey, that Absalom guy's a really cool guy. And so he started to say, hey, you know what? I am a pretty cool guy. And so he kind of got himself a swollen head so much so that he up and wanted to kick his father out of the office and take his place as the king. And you can see about that in the earlier parts of 2 Samuel 15. So hopefully you guys made it there by now. Let's jump into the story at verse 13. Absalom has launched his overthrow, and now it's time for King David to up and move. Very interesting few chapters here, and I'm, for time's sake, be bouncing around in it, just basically skimming over the top of a lot of this. So I highly suggest going back later and reading the entire passages here, starting in chapter 15 and going through basically chapter 19. So 2 Samuel 15, verse 13 says, now a messenger came to David, saying, the hearts of the men of Israel are with Absalom. So David said to all his servants who were with him at Jerusalem, arise, and let us flee, or we shall not escape from Absalom. Make haste to depart, lest he overtake us suddenly and bring a disaster upon us and strike the city with the edge of the sword. Now put in your minds the events going on here. King David is just going along. Now he has a very eventful life, so it's not that he's never had anything crazy going on in his life. He's basically, for a lot of his life, he's going between the frying pan and the fryer, so to say. But right now, ruling Israel was pretty easy from what the events show. It's all of a sudden, though, his son up and wants to kick him out of the office and even kill him. Things heat up awful quick. Verse 12 shows that the conspiracy grew and was rather quick. And something that now King David's kind of thinking in his head. Okay, well, who's with me? Who's against me? Well, what's even going on? King David was probably thinking about going fishing that day. Kind of taking a little bit of levity here. You know, go out, okay, it's just a normal day. Sun's up. Let's go out fishing. Well, now he's got to get his people that are still loyal to him out of town. See a picture here. He's hightailing it out. Your mind at that point would be spinning and spinning. Your thoughts thinking, okay, what is going on? There's treachery afoot. There's a conspiracy that's in my own house, my own son. Thinking about survival. Things flying at you right and left, centered by, again, your own son. Well, that's kind of what I want to talk about today. It's the idea of pandemonium. Confusion. In three words, 2024. This year, an election year in the United States, it's already turning out pretty crazy, and we're just almost halfway through the first month of the year. Now, we don't know when Jesus is going to return, but we are told to watch and to be ready for when things start to happen, when things move a lot quicker. So the question is, how do we conduct our lives in a world that is starting to fall apart? I mean, I'm not saying that this is the end times, but you know, we can see things are getting crazy. Things are starting to line up in such a way that, you know, the return could start moving along pretty fast. Dominoes might be falling pretty quick. This world is just about out of control. The devil's frothed up the world so much that, look at the news. Genocide against the Jews is okay. You know, that's not bad. But when the Jewish people, the people of Israel, go back and start attacking the terrorists, well, that's genocide. You know, that's bad. The U.S. education system has been laid bare. That anti-Semitism is okay and is even encouraged in a lot of the schools. But don't talk bad about Palestinians. I'm not saying that either side's the side of righteousness, but to look at it, it's something that is pretty crazy, pretty bad. And with such craziness, it could be pretty easy to see the churches of God start to get into some hot water with Sabbath keeping. Persecution against Sabbath keepers would be glorified. And Jesus himself says that people that'll take you to your doom will be you know, way to go. You get a start for bringing this person, this crazy person in. What's their, what they do? Well, they're just Sabbath keepers. Well, you know, mentally try to figure it out, but yeah, that's basically what it is. People persecuting other people and being rewarded for it. The world's gone mad. And this is probably just the beginning of such madness. Right now, wrong, right is wrong, and wrong is glorified. Calling a spade. So let's look at King David's actions here in this perilous time in his life to see how we should be acting as our world crumbles around us. We're going to be looking at characters from this passage to aid in the effort here. First person I want to look at in this passage is Ittai. In verse 19, one of the King David's select warriors, is, if you will, the cream of the crop of his warriors. He's a Philistine. That's, again, Mr. Jacobs was talking about trying to find trivia. That is pretty interesting. You look at King David's select men, a lot of them, you look at their records and their backgrounds, you'd say, why'd you choose him? You know, what? Why would he choose a Philistine? You know, those people in the people of Israel, you know, you wouldn't really want somebody that close from that corner of the known world at that point. His name, interestingly enough, means with me. So I could say that he is with me, which fits very well with his words in 2 Samuel 15, verse 21. Hopefully everybody still got it open. It says, but Ittai answered and answered the king and said, as the Lord lives, and as my lord the king lives, surely in whatever place my lord the king shall be, whether in death or life, even there also your servant will be. That's pretty powerful stuff right there. That's a tremendously great friend to have. And that's very important in times of great stress like today. Do we acknowledge the friendships, the strong bonds that we have, especially here at church? Do we help one another in times of need? We've experienced loss, health problems, many terrible things in the last few years. Has that brought us closer to one another? I would think yes. I'm not here to you know, razz anybody that, okay, well, everybody except for that person. No, I think everybody's in a great situation here that we've grown together, closer together, and it's more important as time gets closer. Friendship ends with the word ship. And it's pretty much, we're all in the same boat. We're all fellow rowers. Paul uses the words in the book of Romans that start with sin, but it's S-Y-N, not S-I-N. Sin, like workers, fellow workers, people working together in the same direction. That's what we're doing. We're all moving towards the kingdom, and we need to help one another as we're going along. We need to bond together and keep each other going along. So for Ittai, it's an example in his character that we're to build in our lives, I'm suggesting as a good friend. Next example, and if you go through that passage, and hope, like I said, I encourage it for everyone, are Zadok and Abiathar. Both are co-high priests in this time of madness. Again, you can go through and read it. There was such craziness that the priesthood was divided for, especially the high priesthood. Zadok means righteousness, and Abiathar is father of abundance. If I were to say these two words, these concepts in your mind, kind of points toward godly things, especially, again, as the high priests. Do we keep our righteousness and acknowledgement of God during these crazy times? Now, hopefully this is a no-brainer response, as this is when our faith needs to be strongest. This is the end, you know, when the time comes, we know that the end is near and that the good things are just ahead. The fall holy days are a few months behind us, but hopefully the picture is still in your mind of the beauty that comes after the bad stuff. That's something interesting. I was kind of thinking about it as well. If you look at the book of Hebrews, Hebrews 11, the faith chapter, ironically, at this time that hopefully God causes people to a place of safety. It's been taught about for many years in the church. Ironically, this could be the time, looking at it again from the book of Hebrews, that our faith could be the weakest. Now, I'm not saying that it's a bad thing. Faith without the full understanding is what's basically is written about in Hebrews. Well, we know what's going on at that point. Hopefully, again, at that point, when God calls his people to safety, our faith isn't really faith anymore. It's okay. This is what's happening. We know the end is here. So if you look at it again from the meaning of the word faith in Hebrews 11, our faith actually will dip because it's not something that's not tangible anymore. We'll be able to see that, okay, within a certain amount of time, Jesus is going to be up on the Mount of Olives. We will be there. He will be standing there, and mankind will be, you know, be put under control. Which hasn't happened since basically the fall. And we are living through crazy times. We know why this craziness is happening. We know the plan. And again, kind of forwarding it a little bit to when the stuff starts moving a lot quicker. But as the world falls apart, we know that there's a bigger purpose behind it. The world doesn't know that, and they will be cursing God as things get closer to the end. Why is this happening? Why is that happening? It's somewhere in the book of Revelation. They do curse God. What's going on? But we should be living in great awe of the fulfillment of the plan of God. And that's not going to be easy as we get to that point. And God willing, he calls all his people to safety and tucks under the wing as things get really bad. But we will actually understand and know the reason behind all the craziness that's going to happen. There's something tragic has happened at the Braswell household the last few weeks. My wife's favorite program is no longer in the regular rotation. She likes to watch a certain show where there's some house hunters that go out in England and go to various parts and to, okay, my budget is this many pounds. Okay, we need to find a house that goes within that. I watched it. It's a pretty good show, but unfortunately, like I said, they switched programming to something else. So we had to go find something else yesterday afternoon. We went hunting down a new show, and there's one kind of from the other side. Instead of from the buyer's point, it's from the seller's point. These people had houses that couldn't be sold. They had to do a whole bunch of work on their house. We got some real estate people here, so they probably fully understand. And that's something that is a recurring theme in those shows. And we only watched a couple in the afternoon while we were putting some laundry away. There has to be something bad to get to something good. For some of them, they had clutter everywhere, so they had to go rent a storage place and then put all their stuff away and not be able to access all their stuff while the house is being sold. Another one, they had a big family, and so they had to put the kids together, and the kids didn't want to stay together. They wanted their own room. They wanted freedom. And so, no, you got to do this. And so they had that, again, that recurring theme that something bad has to happen. There has to be a bad medicine taste to get to something good. Well, we know as well, to get to that end time and to the kingdom of God, it's going to take some really bad times. And that's something that we have to know and understand, but help us to strengthen our faith and our reliance on God to protect his people, and that we will be basically pulled through the madness. And that's critical for us and for him to show that he loves his people. He's not going to say, okay, good luck. I'll hope to see you in time and a half, and we'll see what goes on. No, God is with his people. And again, may every one of God's people around the world be spared from all the madness that we know is going to be coming about at the end times. Now, closing out chapter 15, a gentleman named Hushai. His name means haste. He's called David's friend in 2 Samuel 15, verse 37. Now, just like Ittai, he puts his life on the line to save King David. He goes in and gives bad advice to Absalom. That's quite a bold thing to do. It's something that his life very well could have been ended, you know, pretty quick. Why are you giving me this advice? That doesn't sound right. Are you with me or are you with King David? You know, Absalom would kind of say, okay, what's going on here? So let's lump him with the friend idea from earlier. It's something that a friend sticks with you in dire situations, and that will be something that will happen near the end. Chapter 16 opens with Ziba, which means a statue. So maybe he's somebody that was big and buff and statuesque. Here's a picture of a very great, you know, Greek-style statue there. Well, instead of being a statue, he's really a snake in the grass. He accuses his master of turning against King David. Now he's meeting King David with supplies, coming out as a friend. He's actually there to deceive King David. There's a message with the end times with false prophets and false messages. It is possible, it's written about in the New Testament, the elect could be deceived. The key through seeing this is mentioned in 2 Samuel 16, verse 1. Something that is given to King David and his men, and that is fruit. Now, instead of the physical fruit that was given to King David, we need to be able to rightly discern the fruits, the spiritual fruits especially, of evil people. The world will be on fire. Pandemonium will be all around. But we need to stay close to God to not be deceived. We should be praying for a solid, strong spiritual foundation that will be tested near the end, but we have to be able to discern, to see through all the problems that will happen in the end times. This world basically has no moral foundation right now, which is why evil can abound so easily. We need to develop deep spiritual roots that will weather the torrential storm ahead. We know that Jesus himself says that offenses will come, that there will be bad times coming, and that's something that, you know, we have to be able to have strong roots to be able to get through it. Now the next example, again, going through names, is Shimei. Hopefully everybody still has 2 Samuel 16 open. We'll start in verse 5 and read through verse 9. It says, now when King David came to Bahurim, there's a man from the family of the house of Saul, whose name was Shimei, the son of Gera, coming from there. He came out, cursing continuously as he came. And he threw stones at David and at all the servants of King David. And all the people and all the mighty men were on his right hand and on his left. King David's there with his, if you will, the crew that he was escaping with. Verse 7, and Shimei said thus when he cursed, come out, you bloodthirsty man, you rogue. I didn't look at the Hebrew in here, but it probably is something that, you know, rogue is probably a very cleaned up version maybe from the original. Verse 8, the Lord has brought upon you all the blood of the house of Saul, in whose place you have reigned. And the Lord has delivered the kingdom into the hand of Absalom, your son. So now you're caught in your own evil, because you are a bloodthirsty man. And Abishai, son of Zariah, said to the king, why should this dead dog curse my lord the king? Please, let me go over and take off his head. Now he asked nicely, you know, please, can I go take off his head? You know, this is something that's very important in times of peril, in times of madness. Can we keep our heads? King David could very well just swash his hand and said, yeah, go ahead. You ask nice. I'll let you go ahead. If you didn't say please, I wouldn't have said, go ahead. And Shimei, whose name means renowned, would have been recorded in the Bible for being renowned of being a dead dog for cursing the king. Well, instead, his life was spared. But the question is, can we sift through the madness and all the things thrown at us and not become caught up in it? Again, King David, his mind is probably racing a million miles in every single direction, but he has the ability to sift through it in his mind to say, okay, be patient. Don't kill this guy. These are very upset times. And again, can we be people that will do that as well? It's easy to be swept away, but that's not why God called us. He wants us to be strong, level-headed people, just like his son. His son, shown in the Gospels, went through the emotional wringer continuously. He was hated without reason, almost killed multiple times. Obviously, at the end, he was killed for our behalf. He went through all of his life with strength and fortitude, which is a guide for us to live our lives every day. It's something that when he's called in the book of Hebrews, the author, well, he's kind of more of a pilgrim. I think I've mentioned this before, maybe even last time I spoke, so I apologize. My examples are getting old. But it's something that, as a pilgrim, the first one through, we talked about this at the teen Bible study last week. When the people were coming over to California, there was no I-80, there was no I-5, there was no I-15 down south. There was just a whole bunch of trees. You don't know which way other than, well, I got to go west. And that's something that Jesus went through as the pilgrim, if you will, for us to say, okay, you can make it to the end. You can make it through this life. You can be victorious over the devil and this world. And that's something that he calls us to say, okay, come on, this is the way. Don't go meandering through the spiritual forest and pitfalls out there. No, follow what Jesus did for his life as an example for us. That's very important for us. The last one that I want to talk about is Ahithophel. Ahithophel. There we go. Like I said earlier, this passage is well worth reading and delving into the meaning of characters and names. And this is a very important figure here. Ahithophel was a trusted advisor to King David. He, focusing on the word was. He turncoated, jumped ship from King David and went over to Absalom's side. And this fits well with the previous point, keeping one's cool when things go bad. I can remember quite well when things went bad in 1996, when some of the most loyal and trustworthy people to God jumped ship. And it's something that hurt. I mean, it's something that those of us who went through it kind of think, well, what happened? You know, it's something that, this person's got to be loyal. Where, every week, kind of look at the people coming in through the door. Okay, well, this person's got to be coming. They said they'd come. Instead, they kind of just fell into that the teachings that were being taught at that time, and either stayed with it or just fell out of it completely. I hope everyone, especially the end times here now, that everyone will be strong to the end. But it is possible that this sort of thing can happen, and bad news will happen again. We need to be strong and faithful to God as things go really bad. It's something that Christianity is a very tough battle that we face. And fortunately, again, we don't face it alone. We face it with everyone that we have here. We face it with other brethren around the world. Mr. Jacobs was talking about people that he probably will never know, and until the kingdom of God, probably will never see that person until they said, oh, yeah, hey, I remember. Yeah, I sent you that card, and you sent me a note back. Yeah, something that in this life, who knows, that may never see that person ever. We're not going to be alone in our perils that are coming up, and that's where we have to have close bonds with one another. And unfortunately, like was mentioned, trusted counselors and close friends, well, they have their own duty to be faithful to God. We can pray for them, we can help them in their times of need, but in the end, we shouldn't be affected if bad things happen. But again, hopefully not a single bad thing happens to a single person here. Now, King David plods on. Chapter 18, things come to a head. And the father of peace, which is what the name of David's son Absalom means, well, he meets a rather brutal death. King David obviously feels pain for his son's death. In chapter 19, Joab, one of King David's most loyal and greatest warriors, the one involved in his, Absalom's death, gives him quite a bit of a verbal scourging for mourning someone who turned out to be his enemy. Tells him that he's offending all those who put their life on the line for him. Now, do we need that? There's a cartoon here. I think you guys all know the character there. That's something that is something. Do we need someone to remind us that these hard times will be hard, but are necessary to fulfill the end times leading to the kingdom of God? We have each other. We have the great example of Jesus Christ, who went through the terrible times, but we know that tremendously great things are right behind it. Right now, Jesus himself is at the right hand of the Father, waiting for the time to come to usher in his marvelous reign on earth. Keep this in mind when things are burning on the, all around us, on every square inch of the ground, it would seem. And 2024 will be a time of madness. Will it be the beginning of the end? Only the Father knows. Our job until the end is to be ready when it does happen. Watch. But watch with a fortitude that shows that we are worthy of that great reward waiting for us. Be strong, courageous, as was told to Joshua as he was setting off to bring God's people into the promised land. It's a very perilous journey that he faced. But he was told in the book of Joshua three times in the first chapter to be strong and courageous to lead the people of Israel into their promised land. Same for everyone here. Be strong and of good courage as we strive to make it into the kingdom of God.